to avoid fainting, keep repeating.
It's only a podcast.
It's only a podcast.
It's only a podcast.
Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, good whatever time of day it may be, folks. Welcome to another fun-filled, frightful, maybe a bit factual, but full-on suggestive episode of Podcast Macabre. I'm Chris.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Jenny.
Hey, folks. Welcome back, or for the first time, whatever it may be, all are always welcome. We're revisiting a random topic, if you want to even call it a topic, but we're doing a Streaming Screams, where we give recommendations of various things to watch on various platforms. Maybe could be some suggested viewing for the summer break coming up for some people. Or right now, we're in the middle of the Memorial Day weekend here in the U.S. But by the time this episode hits, that's going to be long and over. So never mind that part of the holiday weekend.
You will not be able to follow our list for Memorial Day weekend. I'm so sorry.
Roll it back. But before we dive into that, how the hell have you guys been? It's been a bit.
I've been watching a bunch of creepy stuff, so that's always been fun. I've been revisiting a few classics that I haven't gotten to revisit in a while and checking out some new stuff. The weather's finally halfway decent here, which is a real plus. So, yeah.
Nice.
It's been a good time. I'm hoping to get to the movies a couple of times in the next couple of weeks. My last one, Hokum, was so good that I feel like maybe I'm on a roll and should take the time to check out a couple more. So, we shall see.
I still want to go see that. I still need to make time to get to a movie, but the weather has changed here, so now I have spring projects to catch up on.
If I can at least make it to see Obsession, I will be happy.
Yeah, that's my goal too. How about you, Joe? How you been?
Perfect segue, because I have gotten to the theater recently, just once, to see Obsession. And it is in my top three horror films of the year. The leap that Curry Barker takes from Milk and Cereal to this is astounding. Indy Navarette, I don't see anyone beating her for My Maccabees for best actor female at all. She crushes. So when you guys get to see it, I think it will live up to the hype. Also got out, finally did some more movie location scouting stuff. I drove up to Gorman, California to get two shots out of Psycho. So I got to be in the location where Janet Leigh's character is parked on the side of the road. The cop comes up to her car. Then I drove out to the desert. I was half an hour above Mojave, California. I went to Red Rock Canyon State Park, and I got to see filming locations from Jurassic Park and The Mummy. There were some other films and things that were filmed there that I didn't get to because that park is massive, and I did not come across them in my 10-plus miles of hiking, so I need to go back. But really happy to get back out and hiking and moving and seeing some Southern California filming locations.
Awesome. I actually did things on my time off. I actually went to Crypticon, and Rain and I had a blast. He did a progressive cosplay of Denji from Chainsaw Man, but the first day was kind of just the normal Denji with the pull string and his battle axe, and then the Saturday he actually did the chainsaw arms and everything, so it was a lot of fun. Saw a bunch of short films, some really good, some not so great. One that I did see, Joe, that I know it would be one you might want to watch for, because they did say it's a proof of concept, but it was Apocalypse Sasquatch.
Hell yeah.
That a brother and sister whose dad, who's a recluse, has died, so they need to go out and clear out his cabin, and they find a bunch of old HD tapes, and apparently he befriended some creature in the woods. But at the same time that they are out learning this information, there is a genuine end-of-the-world event occurring. So they may end up having to team up with a Sasquatch to survive the apocalypse.
Say less, bro, and take my money. I'm in. Yeah. Let's do this feature film. At some point before we end the show, we are going to do Desert Island, like Sasquatch Yeti films.
Oh, God, yeah. Especially being out here in the Pacific Northwest, there's at least 4 or 5 short films from the region that have something to do with Sasquatch. The feature-length films I did get to see while there, one of them is The Demonatrix, which was actually a lot of fun. The surprise of the cameo in it is Doug Bradley playing a priest, but this is essentially, you got a young priest and an old priest, but you have a dominatrix in the suburbs who has her own private business, but of course is looking to expand the business and decides to hold seances. Of course, said seance goes wrong, and somehow she reads the spells from a book in demonology that the priest had and ends up summoning an incubus. Chaos ensues from that point on. The actress playing the dominatrix, she is the siren from the VHS films, the I Like You one from the first film. Other than that, celebrity meet and greets were a lot of fun. Got to meet Adrienne Barbeau, and the way that we met her was actually in the elevator, because we're walking through the con, and I look off to the side, and I see a woman with a slightly older hairstyle, very small, petite, holding a huge FedEx box on her chest. So you're talking to like one of the con organizer people, and I'm like, I think that's Adrienne Barbeau. And I told Rain about that the same time that we got over to the elevators, and she ended up getting in the elevator with us. And so I had to politely ask, I said, pardon me, but are you Adrienne Barbeau? And biggest grin, sweetest woman in the world. She goes, yes, I am. And I'm pissed off. I'm like, oh, really? Can you believe this hotel charged me $27 to receive a package I sent to myself? What kind of bullshit is that? When I did get the autograph and picture with her later, I brought that up again and asked her if her stay had gotten better. But she was the sweetest thing. Teeny, tiny lady, but the sweetest thing. Tom Atkins was also there. Sweet as could be, gentleman. Sadly, he's deaf as a post right now. So he freely admits it, but he's polite, pleasant, big smile. Just great guy to meet. Also got to meet David Howard Thornton, Art the Clown. Got him to autograph my box set. Rain actually got spooked slightly by David because the picture that we have, he's in the middle, arms around our shoulders. And right before they took the picture, yeah, and he's got the art hat on, but he's also got the bike horn. He squeaked the bike horn right before the picture, and it made Rain jump because he was so wound and excited to meet him. But the one that was a lot of fun for me, really, was Nathan Basil, Leslie Vernon from Behind the Mask, Rise of Leslie Vernon. He was super cool. I mean, I don't know how much of it, I hate to even think it's an act, but he is essentially just like Leslie, with behaviors, mannerisms, the casualness, the friendliness where he talks, even making jokes of, you know, Paradise Lost. Found it. That's actually a t-shirt you could get with the Kickstarter for the return of Leslie Vernon. Paradise Lost funded it, which I am getting that t-shirt. But his panel was sweet. He's a very passionate guy, very friendly guy, opening great conversations with the audience, and actually spent time with you when you go up and talk to him at his table. There's a moment even during his panel that he almost got a little choked up, in the same way that Leslie gets choked up about all the excitement of, this is finally happening, this is my night, at that point in the movie, that he said he essentially had that same moment of in the little orchard grove there on the set, that, or where their filming location, that he went off there and it's like, this is finally happening, we're finally doing this. And just that wave of emotion, of gratitude and excitement of so much work put into it, that this is finally becoming a reality. So it was really cool to see that. The one surprise guest that I caught, and I think she saw me taking a picture of her. It's like, oh shit, they know it's me or something. Almost was the look on her face. But Gigi Salguero, who lives up in Vancouver, and only let the organizers know like 2 days before the con that she's going to be able to show up. So she was not an announced guest, but they had a block of short films that were women directors. She had a new one called El Lazo de Petra, or Petra's Lasso, that was actually commissioned by Apple, and the whole thing was shot on iPhone 16. It's a very cool little video of like a grandmother telling her granddaughter about the history of Petra, and essentially like a female Zorro, but had her magic lasso and fought all the monsters. And there's times that it switches to a mocap that can apparently be done with the iPhones that made things like a 16-bit, like almost like a Sega Genesis level game animation. It was just a really fun, sweet story. And Gigi was great to see in person too. She was a lot of fun. It made for a great weekend, and I can't wait to go again next year.
Didn't her short film win an award?
Yes, it did win an award. I forget exactly what the award was that they did at the con, because the way they talked about it, it was pretty quick, and it wasn't actually listed in the program. So originally they made it sound like they were going to talk about the award, but then with her being there, they could actually were able to present it to her. It was great that they did have a discussion with her and other directors of shorts for that block that were there. So there was like five different women up there with her. It was interesting to hear everyone else's ideas, concepts, where they came from. There was one that it's done almost like an infomercial of the positive affirmations for women and the beauty treatments. Of course, in the middle of this, a woman finds a pimple, and then it's the different things to do with the pimple, and it progresses to a body horror level. The director for that was there, and she had some really good insights and her influences. Of course, a little bit of Cronenbergian and other things, but it was a lot of fun. That's why I love catching the short film blocks. Other than that, like I said, I've been doing projects. Garden stuff. It's that time of the year. And adapting to my new daytime existence. I'm almost 3 months in now. Almost got my 90-day probationary period over. Going great. Loving my job again. Well, I don't know if I quite love it, but I greatly appreciate my job again. I actually enjoy my job again. So that is a big fucking plus.
Word. And all about that.
So, since I haven't had much time to catch up on movies and stuff, I started looking at things, what I want to watch. So why don't we suggest things for people to watch?
Sounds like a plan.
Anybody want to kick it off?
I can. So the first one was one that I was very excited to see. And I'm actually kind of glad that we ended up postponing because there was more of it available.
Oh.
And that is The Terror, Devil in Silver over on Shudder.
It's on my list too.
Oh my God, I'm loving it so far. Like, it's been so fun to have kind of appointment television because they're only dropping like an episode a week. I'm 3 episodes in, eagerly awaiting the 4th. But the basic premise is that Dan Stevens, who is gradually becoming kind of a horror icon, quite frankly, ends up being wrongfully committed to a mental institution. And it turns out that there's more to the mental institution than originally meets the eye. And I will give a special shout out to Judith Light and CCH Pounder, who are also in it, and Mr. Stephen Root. First 2 episodes are actually directed by Karen Kusama. I'm just loving it so far. It's so dark and so, like, just, you have just this uneasiness throughout it, and I'm so enjoying it so far.
Yeah, I'm loving it. I'm caught up through those 3 episodes as well. There's only a total of 6, so we're halfway through the story. Not only did Karen Kusama direct those first 2 episodes, but they were written by Victor LaValle, who wrote the novel The Devil in Silver that this is adapted from. And I am just loving everything about this so far. I want to shout out someone else, the guy who plays Coffee, Chinaza Uchi, who's Pepper's roommate in this show. He is putting on a clinic. Him and Judith Light have made this for me, other than Dan Stevens, but I'm really enjoying the hell out of this.
I haven't started that. I do have it on my watch list, but by a funny coincidence, my long book that I've chosen to listen to this summer while I'm out mowing and stuff and in the car is The Terror.
Oh, hell yeah.
I just started that finally. Nice.
Awesome. Yeah, and I think this is like coming out weekly on cable if you have AMC, but it is also streaming on Shudder.
Yeah. Cool. My first recommendation is actually twofer, because They have both of them on Netflix now. The Black Phone and the Black Phone 2. I still have to see the Black Phone 2. I've gotten way behind on my watching, and that is one that is on my Podcast Macabre challenge list, so I will definitely be watching that in the future, and probably revisiting the first one as well.
Black Phone 2 was on my challenge list, and I enjoyed it, I think, more than the first movie.
Oh, nice.
I really like the direction they took it in, and it opens up things for more if they want to do it.
Good. Cool. Well, what's next up on your list then, Joe?
So we're going to stick with Netflix, and one that I honestly did not think I'd be recommending, that's Anaconda from last year. It is like Faces of Death, so this remake in this world, the film Anaconda exists. And Jack Black, Paul Rudd, and Steve Zahn are old friends who, when they were younger, they made Super 8 movies. They grow up, Paul Rudd is an actor, but struggling. Jack Black wanted to be a writer-director, but he's stuck doing, like, wedding videos that he tries to make, not artsy, but, like, B-movie thrillers and things like that. So, total fun beer and pizza movie, completely stacked cast. If you and your friends ever did any sort of, like, staging a movie, whether you filmed it or not, or, like, staged, like, Halloween Horror Night situations, like me and my friends did, like, this is a must-watch. It's not a great film, but it is a fun film.
I will maybe give it a try on your recommendation. The trailer for it turned me off. It didn't really resonate for me, but after your suggestion, I am willing to give it a chance.
I, too, will be giving it a shot.
What's the next one up on your list then, Jenny?
The next one on my list is on Tubi, and that is Night Visions. It's an anthology series, and in my research, I discovered it debuted 2 months before 9/11, which is probably why it kind of flew under my radar a little bit. It only aired for that one season with 26 different stories divided into 13 episodes, and it was hosted by Mr. Henry Rollins, who I adore. It has tales directed by everyone from Joe Dante to Toby Hooper to Joe Beth Williams and Bill Pullman. It's kind of a grab bag of subgenres with some truly inspired castings, such as Natasha Lyonne, Jack Palance, Mayor Winningham, and Timothy Oliphant, to just name a few. It's chock full. I would have loved, like, a few more seasons. I'm kind of sad that it kind of flew under my radar a little bit, but I had a lot of fun with it.
I have vague recollections of this one, but yeah, I'll have to definitely look that up on Tubi. Are you familiar with that one at all, Joe?
I thought it was something else until you started describing it, Jenny. I have no recollection of this, but I'm in the anthology. All the directors you mentioned, Henry Rollins, like, yeah, sign me up.
Yeah, I was like, how did I not know about this?
Segue right off of that, and also to mention Bill Pullman, is one of those things I didn't even know existed until Netflix started beating me over the head with it this week. That is the new series, The Burrows. Got Alfred Molina, Gina Davis, Alfre Woodard, Peter O'Hare, Bill Pullman, Claire Peters, many other people that are quite recognizable of slightly older actors. It's essentially Alfred Molina's characters, or the gist I've gotten from watching the trailer. I haven't dove deeply into it yet, but gets moved to a retirement community by his kids. And it looks to be like, you know, fun, happy, joyous place. But it seems to be there's an undercurrent of maybe like there's some alien invasion and body modification things happening that this group of retirees start to investigate. It's from the producers of Stranger Things, so I'm curious to see how that one plays out. But it did catch my interest. The trailer looked really good.
Is the twist that they're all really robots?
No. You can see in the trailer there is definitely some alien-type creature things happening. But in Netflix, probably all the episodes have dropped already. And it looks to be an 8-episode season. Joe, what's next up on your list?
We're headed over to Shudder for the regional slasher film Dolly. It got a limited run in theaters earlier this year, just hit Shudder last couple weeks. It reminded me a whole lot of Dollface from Tommy Faircloth that I had us watch during ABCs of Horror a while back, but without the humor. There's a little bit of dark humor in this, but there's no intentionally funny moments. Like, they go for it being a sick and twisted, terrifying thing. I really enjoyed it. Super low budget affair. So, you know, keep it in mind that it is a regional horror film and not a big budget situation. Love the location where they filmed out in Tennessee. I'm a sucker for anything in the woods, so this had that in spades. Couple goes out hiking, run across this person who turns around and is this giant hulking human being dressed as a doll wearing a doll face mask and kidnaps the woman to be their baby. I mean, just brutally awesome for the low budget regional horror that it was.
Yeah, this one's high on my list.
I really wanted to watch this before this episode, but didn't get a chance to, but it's going to be viewed because it looks so weird and fun.
What's next up on your list, Jenny?
Next up on my list is from Netflix, and that is 28 Years Later, The Bone Temple.
Awesome, awesome.
Directed by Nia DaCosta, written by Alex Garland. Ralph Fiennes, Jack O'Connell, Alfie Williams are all back. It's another installment in the franchise, and this one gives us a little more of Dr. Kelson and Spike, some more Samson, and much more of Jimmy Crystal's gang, as Dr. Kelson's research starts to take a little bit of a turn and shit goes weird because it's the 28 Days Later franchise.
How's that?
I did see one Jimmy cosplayer at Crypticon.
Nice. What I would really like to do is take a day. Maybe I'll do it tomorrow because I have tomorrow off. But I really want to take a day and watch the two latest ones back to back. Because I didn't get to do that yet. But yeah, I'm in. It, keep making them. Bring them. I want them all.
Yeah, I can't wait for the third film of this trilogy. So next up is one I actually haven't seen yet. But it caught my attention, so I added it to my watch list on Prime. It is by Tiago Teixeira, and it is a shorter one. It's just under 80 minutes, but it's called Custom. It is about a couple who produces like custom porn by request of people through their company and whatever. So they get a request from a mysterious client to do these specific things for a film. And it turns out it's actually reenacting a ritual. And of course, anytime we reenact rituals, things do not go well. It looks very creepy. It looks a little bit Videodrome-ish. It looks a little bit Possession-ish. It looks like definitely some Cronenberg-like influences to it. And so I'm down for it. And it's currently available on Amazon Prime.
Yes, this will be going on the watch list. That sounds fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah, it does.
I almost watched it this morning because it's just such a short film. It's from 2024. And yeah, it's 76 minutes. The trailer looks so good. The camera work and things. Joe, what is your next one?
Be quick on it, 'cause it's one we've talked about a lot. But Dust Bunny from the great Brian Fuller is now on HBO Max. It's what if Leon the Professional lived in the Pushing Daisies universe. Little girl has a monster under the bed, hires a hitman to take care of the monster because it keeps killing her foster parents. Despite all that, it is more of a kid's film than anything else, even though it's rated R. But beautiful, great performances from Mads Mikkelsen and Sophie Sloan, who plays the little girl.
Yeah, I made sure that I had that on my HBO list when I was double-checking different things this morning. And it was. Jenny, what's next up on yours?
Next up on my list is another Netflix selection, and that is Life After Beth. Aubrey Plaza has been very much in the news lately, for she is expecting Spawn. And some people have some real big feelings about that. I'm kind of like, she's Aubrey Plaza. Leave her alone. But this story basically is a zombie love story with a bang-up cast. including Aubrey Plaza, John C. Reilly, Anna Kendrick, etc., etc. And it centers around Zach and his recently deceased girlfriend, Beth. After grieving her sudden death, he realizes that Beth is back, and we follow him as he navigates this new and very strange version of their relationship.
I see the trailer for that one. I can't remember if I added it to my list or not.
I had fun with it.
I too am a Aubrey Plaza fan, as well as Anna Kendrick.
Yeah, I mean, come on. How can you go wrong?
Yeah, that's been on my list, but I've not watched it yet. I will say, if you've not watched the last week of Stephen Colbert stuff from The Late Show, Aubrey Plaza's on it, asking him the series of questions that he asks everyone, and her bit is fucking hilarious.
She's a riot. I love her so much. Like, she doesn't know how to behave, and I like it. I really, really like it.
I'll just say this. She does utter the question, "Did you see my vagina?"
Sounds about right. Sounds on brand.
Well, my next up keeps us over on Netflix, actually. And I'm going back to a classic for a TV recommendation of, if you're like me and you do like anime, but you kind of missed out on what some people consider the core of the classic anime shows. And some of them just seem too daunting to jump into. Like, of course, such things like One Piece, because it's still an ongoing 5,000 episodes and whatever, and Dragon Ball and Naruto and all that type of stuff. There are anime series that are considered classics, but they are completed series. This one I absolutely love, and that is Death Note from 2006. Tokyo Ghoul is one that's like 75 episodes, which is another one. But with Death Note, it's about 40 episodes, half-hour episodes each, and it is an incredible cat-and-mouse game of the different characters in it. The base being that you have a death god dropped his book into the mortal plane, and if a mortal finds it, they get control of it. And within the Death Note book, if you write someone's name in it, they will die. There's all sorts of other rules that play along with this and so on, but the person who finds it is a high school student who actually is a genius, almost like a Moriarty level, more than Sherlock, of genius, because he's also a bit of a sociopath, you learn as things progress. With that much unlimited power, there, of course, is another genius who counterpoints to him. And so the genuine cat and mouse games that they play of who's outplanning who and who's playing the chess game so many steps ahead of the other makes for a great story progression through the whole series. I really enjoyed it. It does drive you along to watch more and more of the episodes. And it's great because it is a completed series. So you know you're getting a wrap up and an ending, and it's worth the time to dive into.
Never watched the anime, but I did see the movie, and I'm positive the anime is far better than the film, but I actually thought the film was decent enough.
I still haven't watched the film yet because I heard such a mixed bag on it, but it's on my list. I still mean to watch it because it's still available on Netflix and stuff, just to watch for comparison. What's next up on your list, Joe?
We're going to head over to Hulu for Hollow Road. It stars Rosamund Pike and Matthew Rhys. It is a tense thriller, psychological horror in a way that mostly takes place with the two lead characters in the car driving to meet their daughter, and they have their daughter on speakerphone. It could be one of the most boring movies you've ever watched because it's 80 minutes long and almost all of it is them in the car. But it is so well written and acted. The daughter is out on some back road. She's gotten in a wreck and has, she believes, killed somebody. So the parents are on the way out to help her because they don't want this to ruin her life. While they're on the way, the daughter says, "Oh, I see your headlights," even though the parents aren't near her yet. They're still like a good 30 minutes away. So they start telling her, "You gotta hide the body," because they know it's someone else. And then there's this whole cat and mouse game between the parents talking to the people that show up on the scene and dealing with their daughter. It is such a treat. I watched it just on a lark and fell in love with it. It was so well done.
Ooh, that sounds good.
Which platform was it on again, Joe?
Hulu.
Hulu. Okay. I saw a trailer for that one, and it intrigued me. I like the concept, and it'd be a nice little bottle episode or bottle film type thing. I like those things.
I'll just tease, watch the credits, because as you see who plays what parts, you might get a surprise.
Some of those recognizable voice things. Total side tangent, one of the other free time things, I've been playing Diablo 4. With the new expansion of Diablo 4, there's actually a fishing side thing that you can do in the game now. But the way that you unlock the quest is this little Asian-sounding fisherman who is cranky and is not happy with you because he feels you've stolen his fishing spot, but he still helps you out. Just by hearing the voice, I had to look it up in the credits. And yes, it is James Hong, Lopan himself from Big Trouble in Little China and so many other films. But yeah, I could just get to that point where you recognize voice actors without even, all you got to do is hear the voice. It's like, wait a minute, I know that dude. So yeah, I like that, especially with phone call stuff. It was like, oh, wait a minute. Is that who I think it is? So cool. Jenny, what's your next one?
My next one is also on Hulu, and that is 2024 Shell. Directed by Max Minghella. This stars Kate Hudson, Elizabeth Moss, and Elizabeth Berkley. A producer persuades an aging actress to undergo a rejuvenating procedure at Shell, a beauty company that uses genetic technology. It feels like it could exist in the same universe as The Substance, and while I feel like this is definitely the weaker of those two, if we're getting down to it, I still really enjoyed it.
Yeah, it's the trailer for that comic, and it's just because of the casting alone. It looked like it might have a bit more humor to it than The Substance, but it was, it definitely caught my attention. Glad to see it's available somewhere.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun with it.
Have you seen that one, Joe?
I have not even heard of that one, so I'll have to check it out.
The trailer for it is hilarious. The trailer for it hooked me in, definitely the nice dark humor vibe. And speaking of humor, I went off on a different tangent of trying to find other platforms for watching things. But one that's doing its best in its own way, rival Tubi a little bit, is Fossum. It's spelled just like awesome with an F in the front of it. And they do multiple genres and different things. They do have commercial breaks as well. But they also have a really decent horror selection of some unusual films. And one of them they have is from a director that I've seen one of his other films. This director's last name is Zebub. His first name is Bill. Bill Zebub. Yes, indeed. The first one of his films I saw randomly on a Sling TV one night was The Boogers of Christ. Because if anything can be a reliquary from one of the saints, why not his boogers? But this one, the title alone says it all. Dick Nato. His films are essentially incredibly low budget, softcore horror comedies. So, yeah, Dick Nato. As it says, the tornado takes a form that is commonly found in nature, like mushrooms and snakes, but it makes it all the more dangerous.
I think I'll pass on that one and I'll wait for the boobpocalypse.
Oh, I saw that. I just like, just for anybody who wants that really random shit, Fossum can scratch that itch for you. So, as well as some other things, I've got another one from that they have that I'll recommend down the road here. But Joe, what is your next one?
My next one was a blind find that turned out to be one of the favorite things on my entire list. It's available on Amazon Prime, Shudder, and Tubi, and it is called Loop Track. It's a film out of New Zealand, directed, written, and starring Thomas Sainsbury. Effectively, it's a guy whose life is going way wrong. He goes out to this gorgeous national park in New Zealand, the hike out by himself. It's kind of ambiguous if he plans to come back or not, let's say. So he's trying to avoid other people, but he happens to get caught up in a very small group also backpacking through there. And it's one of those places that's so large, if you're going to go from one end to another and back, it's multiple days. So they have stations set up that you can actually go in that are like buildings and things like that. So you don't actually camp just out in nature. It reminded me a lot of the film Friendship that I absolutely love. That level of awkwardness. But ultimately, he starts seeing things in the shadows of the forest as they're hiking, and no one believes him. It goes in a direction I was not expecting, but I was so 100% on board for. Absolutely loved it, raved about it so much. Elisa caught like the tail end of some things, but it didn't ruin the ending for her because she missed the very end of it. And the next morning, she's like, what was that thing you were watching last night? It was really interesting. I was like, loop track. I'll watch it again. Let's watch it now. Let's do it.
Let's loop that track.
Yeah, let's loop that bad boy right through. But I absolutely loved it. It was, again, another out-in-the-woods situation. But the way it was done and seeing friendship first and then having that level of awkwardness already in my mind to apply to this just helped. It was such a fantastic watch for me. A very slow burn for like the first hour plus, and it's only like an hour and 34 minutes, but when the last 20 minutes hits, holy Jesus.
Yeah, this one's actually been on my radar for a while because it was initially released on Arrow earlier this year. So I've had it on my watch list over there, so glad to see it's getting other exposures and other opportunities. Definitely going to check it out.
Well, and I really loved Friendship, so I am on board.
Nice.
Yeah, I get it. I remember you loving that one, too. I think this is going to be right in your wheelhouse.
Nice.
What's next on your list, then, Jenny?
Something that's also in my wheelhouse over on Shudder, and that was Night Patrol.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Starring Jermaine Flowers, Justin Long, Flying Lotus, and Dermot Mulroney, it follows an LAPD officer who finds out that the elite, quote-unquote, Night Patrol is more than a standard task force after his brother witnesses his girlfriend dying at their hand. Rival gangs join forces to battle them. This was just so, so fun. It feels kind of like a slice of life police thing at the very start, and then you quickly realize that the dynamics that you're witnessing are not what you kind of think they are. I had a lot of fun with it. It's not without its flaws, but I definitely enjoyed it.
But you didn't mention former WWE World Heavyweight Championship CM Punk as part of the cast.
I was busy talking about Dermot Mulroney.
I laughed because Cheddar dropped this the same weekend of the most recent WrestleMania. And so that's when I'm like, oh, I wonder if they did that on purpose or not. But yeah, I've been eager to check this one out too. It looks like a lot of fun. The next one I've got to recommend though is Far From Fun. It's one of those I've always been hesitant to recommend to people. But if you want to take that dark path, if you want to go vacationing out in the woods with a cast that has gotten just bigger since the film itself, that is 2008's Eden Lake. That is available on Prime.
Bleak, bleak, bleakity, bleak, bleak.
Yes.
But very good.
Yeah. Starring Kelly Riley, who was on multiple seasons of Yellowstone. Michael Fassbender. Everybody knows Fassbender. But also a very young Jack O'Connell. What happens is you have a young couple, Fassbender and Riley's characters of Jenny and Steve, just go off into the country, backwoods, snoozing on a beach, and some young teen hooligans kind of mess with them. So they mess with them back, and things progress from there. It gets dark and bleak, and it's got Joe's favorite style of ending, the most downerous of downs. So it's one I haven't watched in a while, but I've really been meaning to revisit because God damn, it is a good movie, but it's one of those, can't watch that often.
No.
Still haven't seen it. It is on my Podcast McClap challenge list, so I will get to it this year, but I have intentionally been holding it till near the end because I'm hoping for big things the way everyone raves about it and says that the end is very much me.
Yeah. I've thought about having this for a driving double feature, but again, like I said, I've always been hesitant to make other people watch this. I can suggest it to them, but I didn't want to make people watch it. So maybe you guys, because I know you guys can deal.
We can handle it.
Yeah. Well, Joe, what's next up on your list?
So I unintentionally had a theme to mind that I didn't realize until I saw my final 10. My next one is on Paramount Plus. It is Primate, that came out in theaters earlier this year from Johannes Roberts.
Oh, nice.
Super fun animal attack film in the vein of Cujo. You feel horrible for everyone involved, but most especially the chimpanzee Ben, who is actually played by a person in a very realistic looking suit. Miguel Torres Umba plays Ben, and it's one of my favorite performances of the year. They crush it, the way they move and just their response to things, and then the change in them when the rabies hits. Oh my God. Beer and pizza movie through and through. Heightened because the chimpanzee can talk through an iPad, so you get what the chimpanzee is thinking when the rabies really hits and it gets, for lack of a better term, the rage virus. But, oh, fun, fun time.
Okay. But do they use the Michael Jackson song Ben at any time in the credits or any time in the movie?
Not that I recall, no. Oh.
Okay. I just thought that could be kind of the irony fit. But, yeah. Jenny, what's the next up on your list?
Next up on my list is also over on Shudder. Just like my last one. And that is 2025's Whistle.
Yeah.
I haven't had a chance to see it yet, but I want to.
I thought about buying one of those off of TikTok when they were popular.
Directed by Corin Hardy and written by Owen Edgerton. Daphne Keene stars as Chris, a new student who finds a very strange whistle in her locker on her first day. When the whistle is confiscated by a teacher played by Nick Frost, it soon becomes clear that it's not just an ordinary musical instrument, and Chris and her new schoolmates get pulled into the path of an ancient and hungry evil. I really enjoyed it. It was right up my alley.
Yeah, yet again, another one that's on my list, and I just haven't gotten a chance. I wish I need like a month vacation to just catch up on so many films. I would love that.
Yeah, that'd be real cool. If I'm elected.
Yeah.
Everyone should get a sabbatical like teachers and professors do. Everyone. All jobs across the board. 1 month sabbatical. Yes. Paid in full, guaranteed for all. Vote for me, 2028.
Agreed. I'm with you. Yeah. And you know, all you have to do is just do like 1/12 of the population gets a month off at a time, and you could kind of shift it, and then everybody would be happy. Everyone would get that reset.
I fully, you got my vote. Anyway, see, next up on my list, everyone always talks about Snakes on a Plane, but what about Werewolves on a Train? 2015's Howl is currently available on Prime.
I talk about it. I'm people. That's me.
I love this movie. I haven't watched it in a little while, but it was far better than I expected it to be. And of course, Sean Pertwee, I mean, it makes two good werewolf movies that he's been in. So, yeah, you got passengers on a commuter train that gets diverted to an area where the train usually doesn't go. But then, of course, there's a breakdown and bad things happen involving werewolves. It's a nice cat and mouse under siege type film, and highly recommend it, especially for people who into werewolves that have not seen it yet.
Get the motherfucking werewolves off my motherfucking train.
Either of you guys seen it? You've seen it, haven't you, Joe?
Multiple times.
Okay. Have you seen it, Joe?
I have not.
Oh. It's so good. Sean Pertwee plays the conductor of the train. So, yeah, things get outrageous because, of course, it's uptight British people that this type of thing can't happen to me. And yeah, it can. Anyway, Joe, what's next up on your list?
Another one I won't spend a lot of time on because most people know it, but on Hulu, Sam Raimi's Send Help from earlier this year, starring Rachel McAdams and Dylan O'Brien. It just hit Hulu recently. Charter plane goes down on a deserted island. lady who's been screwed over by her boss's son, and that person survive. He's now her boss, and the dynamics of that power shifts to her because she just happens to be a survival specialist. As things progress, it turns into, to steal your term, Chris, a cat and mouse game between her and her boss. As they both struggle for power in their relationship while trying to survive on this island, it is gory, goopy, bloody, and funny as all hell, but it is survival horror at its heart and core, and it is a fantastic film.
Yeah, I love this in the theater. I'm eager to watch it again, too. So good.
Yeah, I might actually do that one tonight, because I've been kind of circling around it. I need to just do it.
What's next up on your list, Jenny?
Next up on my list is on Shudder, and that is Tales from the Crypt.
Tales, yes.
Finally.
Right now, or at least when I checked, there were 4 seasons, but allegedly 5 and 6 are coming as well. This show was a staple once I got a little bit older and had cable, right after I moved out of my parents' house. And I guarantee this will be background noise for my existence pretty regularly for the next foreseeable future.
Yeah. Again, we keep presenting all this goodness that I got to try to catch up on and watch and revisit. So many good episodes on that series.
So good. And I started it the other night, kind of while I was doing a little bit of writing, and I was like kind of chilling out, and I was like, oh, I'm actually going to stop this before I fall asleep because I want to pick it back up tomorrow, you know? So it's really fun to revisit it for sure.
Let's see. My next up is another one from Fossum. This is 2025's Mortal Game. This one definitely falls in the vein of like the Deadliest Prey type things and the Most Dangerous Game. But a bunch of hunters from different skill sets, of course, are brought together to this island to hunt this creature. But it turns out the guy who brought them all together, he's actually using them for bait. Because this is more than just a basic animal that begins stalking them as well. This one falls into the vein, definitely from the trailer, of trying to capitalize a little bit off of Prey, the Predator film. Because one of the lead characters in it is a woman who does look to be First Nations and also hunts with a bow. One of the big title cards in the trailer says, The Prey. And the font and style look a lot like the title for Prey. So your mileage may vary. I didn't recognize really anybody out of the cast on this one, but I might be willing to give it a chance with the random deep dives you can find on Fossum. It's just like Tubi. You guys have both seen it, right?
I have not.
I've only seen that one. I haven't seen Prey yet.
Prey? What is Prey?
Yeah. Speaking of, I'm learning with my new work crew. I'm not being as judgmental on people that have not seen a movie. Because I've got some of them are definitely younger than me. But by that discussion and people who have not seen things, I did strongly encourage one of my coworkers to see An American Werewolf in London because they'd never even heard of it. So I feel I'm doing the Lord's work in my own way at this time.
Dark Lord's work.
How old were they?
The master of abortions.
Oh, I want to say probably at least late 20s to early 30s.
Okay. Yeah, I could see them not having an idea about that.
Yeah. So I'm happy for them. And I really do hope they do watch it. And I hope they enjoy it because we had a discussion the other night. There's times with our work scheduling that there's just 2 to 3 of us that are there for like the last hour of the shift as everyone else has gone home as we just do the shutdown and cleanup. And so there's time to discuss things. And so we started talking about it. And I even looked at her and said, I'm info dumping right now. So you're seeing a lot more of my nerd than a lot of people see this early. I try to restrain it. So I'm going to reel it back a little bit here because I started geeking out about Rick Baker and the Oscar and the makeup effects and everything. But yeah, new people I can try my material out on. There we go. Look at it that way. Let's see, Joe, what's your next up?
We're going to roll back onto Netflix for some pure trashy, cheesy sharksploitation. I'm talking Tommy Wirkola's Thrash.
Nice.
So hear me out, okay? Not a good movie, but it has some great kills. The shark effects look pretty damn good. But it seriously hits home for me. And I know not everyone will have my same experience. But this is set on a coastal town in South Carolina. In between Myrtle Beach and Charleston. There's a hurricane coming. And when the flood from the waters happen, sharks roll into this town and start eating people left and right. I lived in Charleston when Hurricane Hugo, a Category 4 hurricane, swept through and the eye hit Charleston. The flooding from the tide of that hurricane downtown Charleston was at least 12 feet high. Some of the buildings down there, you can still see the level at where the watermark was because under it is cleaner than what's above it. So this hit for me on several different levels, but it is another animal attack bear and pizza movie that I will profess, if it's your thing, check it out.
Yeah, there's so many freaking shark movies out there now.
Not enough.
Yeah, I'll give me all of them. None of them hardly are any good, but I'll watch every damn one.
And odds are I'll enjoy every damn one.
Jenny, what do you got next?
Next, I went over to Tubi and I watched Fear Itself.
Ooh.
13 episode anthology. I was very much on an anthology kick. I think my like attention span is just in the dumpster right now, but I made the most of it. It only lasted one season, but there's some top names in horror in the director's seat, including Mick Garris, Richard Chismar, and Max Landis. And there are so many familiar faces, Doug Jones, Jesse Plemons, Eric Roberts, etc., etc. I mean, it's only 13 episodes. Go do it. Why not, right?
Wasn't that supposed to be like the follow-up for Masters of Horror?
Yes and no. That actually is season 3 of Masters of Horror after it got stolen away.
Oh, okay. That's what I thought.
Oh, Mick.
Yeah, I remember seeing some episodes of that, and it was a lot of fun.
It's a good time, and it's just nice little bite size, like, sometimes more literally than others. But but yeah, I definitely enjoyed this one, and it's just so fun to see slightly older projects where you get to see someone who's kind of really in the thick of it now when they were a little bit younger, and like it's always a good time to me.
We'll see. For me, I've got one. I'm jumping back over to Fossum is where I saw it at, but it's available apparently on Tubi and Prime and other places too. It is 1999's Resurrection, starring the Highlander himself, Christopher Lambert, directed by the director of the Highlander films himself, Russell Mulcahy, also starring Leland Orser, which is kind of funny in its own way because you have Leland Orser, who had one of the parts in Seven, now playing one of the cops in what's essentially a Seven-inspired detective film. Instead of the Seven Deadly Sins, you have a serial killer who's taking body parts from 33-year-olds and rebuilding the body of Christ. So a little darker, different serial killer film that kind of flew under the radar. I vaguely remember hearing about it, but I think this may have been one of those straight to video. Definitely Seven inspired, and it's like Mulcahy tried to take the best of Fincher's stuff from Seven for this, was the gist I got from some of the reviews for it for Letterboxd. So I'm willing to give it a shot. Either of you guys heard of that one?
I have heard of it. I have not seen it.
Noi and Noi.
Okay. Well, I guess that brings us around to our 10th and final selections from each of us. Jenny, what you got?
For my 10th selection, I went back to Shudder because, of course, they have some pretty fun stuff. And I chose The Found Footage Phenomenon.
Oh, that is a good one.
I mean, you guys know I love found footage. Even the bad, it doesn't matter. I really enjoy that subgenre. And for only being an hour and 41 minutes long, this was surprisingly thorough. Kind of a discussion about the evolution of found footage. Boatload of familiar faces from the subgenre, including Andre Overdahl, Eduardo Sanchez, Oren Peli, and clips from everything from Snuff to the McPherson tapes to Cannibal Holocaust. Really just enjoyed it. I mean, for the, like, this could easily be like a 6-hour documentary, like some of the, you know, like the Friday the 13th one and the Nightmare on Elm Street one. But for being so short, it really covered a lot of ground. Covered a lot of footage, if you will.
Yeah, I watched that one a while back. And on a side note, for anybody who's got Roku, or you probably get it online for other apps, there actually is an app out there now, or a site, that is Found TV. And it's nothing but found footage horror films.
Love it.
Yeah.
We'll be looking that up.
You had to go back. I knew I'd seen it, but I didn't remember what I thought of it. And I did give it a decent review and, you know, said it wasn't the deep dive that we're getting out of some documentaries these days. But what they did hit and the analysis of the subgenre, I really did appreciate. I wish we could get not as long as some of the ones that we got for the In Search of stuff, but
right.
I would love to see almost like a series of maybe 3 or 4 episodes that really go into this, that are each like 1 to 1.5 hours.
It's exactly the same thing as I felt about the Women in Horror one,
mm-hmm.
where it's yes. like, I just want more. I want to be able to, like, these little things that kind of get a brief mention, I'd love to be able to dive a little deeper into those and have it fleshed out a little bit. So yeah, this was definitely the same kind of feeling for me.
Speaking of that, that is one, I'm assuming it's not your last recommendation, Joe, but the most recent In Search of Darkness documentary is available on Shudder now, too. And you can look for the podcast Macabre within the credits.
Pretty nice. Yeah, I saw that pop up.
I've got my physical copy. I still haven't watched yet. I've been bad about my movie watching lately. My whole shift of work has really changed around the way I got to watch stuff. So, Well, Joe, what's your final one?
We're headed back to Hulu for a film from 2024 that just actually got wide release in the States earlier this year. The zombie film from Zach Hilditch, We Bury the Dead. It stars Daisy Ridley. I remember seeing a trailer for it, and I thought about going to catch it downtown at the Alamo Drafthouse down there, but I just never made it. From my memory, the trailer and the posters made it look like a total action-packed-y sort of fast zombie situation. That it is not that movie. This is a very introspective, shambling, slow burn of a movie that's more about drama than anything else. So this situation, the United States has accidentally set off an experimental weapon off the east coast of Tasmania. Everyone immediately caught in the blast, dead. A lot of people on the island, dead. As they have volunteers coming in to help with the body cleanup, they find that some, but not all, people start getting up. They don't really do anything. They just get up, they stand there, their eyes are all messed up, and they're just staring at the people. So as the volunteers run into these reanimateds, they set off flares. The military comes in, puts a bullet in their brain pan, puts them down, they move on. The more they do this and the closer they get to where the actual site of the explosion from the weapon happened, they start finding that the ones who have reanimated the longest start getting violent and angry and actually attacking people. Daisy Ridley volunteers because her husband was on a work retreat at a resort near the blast site, so near that ground zero. And she's traveling to see if she can find him one 2, if he happened to somehow survive, or 3, if he became one of the reanimated. It is a really good movie if you go into it knowing what it is and you're not expecting like a Train to Busan situation as far as the action goes. I was super impressed with it. I really enjoy it. So if that's your type of zombie movie that you dig on, there was one small part I wish they would have changed. And if they would have taken that out, it would have been a, like a 4.5 star possibly from me. Just because I love the story so much.
Yeah, that one's been on my radar as well. Have you seen that one by chance, Jenny?
I have not, but I definitely like the sound of it.
I'll see. My final one softened up my list a little bit here at the end. But one that I'm happy to see available on Prime now. Because the only way I'd been able to watch before was someone's upload to YouTube. Because it just was not on any platforms anywhere. And that is the delightfully dark and, in my opinion, one of Willem Dafoe's best performances ever, 2000's Shadow of the Vampire.
Nice.
Yes, brother. I saw that on there, and I left it off because I thought you might put it on yours.
It's essentially the making of Nosferatu on the premise that with F.W. Murnau, played by John Malkovich, hired Max Schreck, who wasn't just a method actor. What if he really was a vampire? And you have the legendary Udo Kier. The first time going into this, I had no idea Cary Elwes was in this. And he's a delight as well. And Eddie Izzard. It makes for just a great film. But, oh, the levels that Willem Dafoe goes to in this as Max Schreck behind the makeup, the malevolence that he projects at times. It's just such a great film. And, for anybody who is a fan of Nosferatu, be it the most current one or the original, whatever, definitely catch this one while it's still available over on Prime.
Yeah, that's one that definitely kind of vanishes sometimes. So if you find a place where it's streaming, take advantage.
Yeah.
It played the New Beverly last month, and I didn't get a chance to see it because I want to say it was a midnight screening, and midnight screenings are just a pain in the ass for me these days, but I really wanted to go see it, but I was super happy they had it on.
Well, that was a quick and dirty list. And for anyone who was trying to keep a list through the episode, don't worry. As always, the Letterboxd list will be put up in companion with this, link to it in the show notes so that you can see what all we recommended and where it is currently streaming.
Yeah, buddy.
One of the films, I didn't use any Shudder recommendations for my list. I decided to do a little bit
different. That's okay, because I used like 50, so.
Well, one of them that I thought about putting on as a Shudder recommendation, because at this point it can be a segue into discussion of what our future episode is, and that's Mother of Flies. Because I was going to watch that last night, and probably will watch it tonight now. But isn't that a nice setup for what our next episode is, Joe?
It would be, because that is our next episode, is a filmmaker focus on the Addams Family and their horror films.
Yep. I got to do a bunch of cram watching this week, over the next Same. 2 weeks. Because I realized, oh shit, I've fallen behind on my homework. But it's all worth it.
Yeah, Mother of Flies is the only one that I have not seen yet, so I need to watch that, and then I'm going to revisit all the others.
About half of them will be first-time watches for me. So that's kind of why I thought this would be a great topic, a great thing to get into, because it's always pushes me to watch stuff I've been meaning to. And what have we got beyond that, Joe? I don't have my note in front of me, though, of when our summer of Steven officially kicks off this year.
Yeah, that is literally what we have and all we have this summer because of various situations that we all have going on. So Summer of Steven Part 1 will hit for everyone on the 26th of June. That will be your pick, Chris, which is 1922. Then we have nothing in July until the 31st, which is our Part 2 of Summer of Steven. And that is Jenny's selection of Big Driver.
Hell yeah.
Then we have nothing in August until August 28th when we do Part 3 of Summer of Steven 2026. And that's my choice for many reasons. We are going to do The Body and Stand By Me. So yeah, our Summer of Steven is truly what we got this year because we all have stuff going on. And between what we already had for breaks and what we couldn't do for various concerts, events, work, or what have you, we just decided to break our extended summer break up into an all summer except for our Summer of Steven.
And yeah, for any new listeners, which I hope got some new listeners off this one, because at Crypticon, I did disperse about 100 business cards in various areas of the con. I saw them being picked up off the tables when I go back by, so welcome. But for you new folks, what our Summer of Steven is, we've been doing for several years now, is we pick a Stephen King short story or novel or whatever that has been adapted into a film, and we read the story as well as watch the film and discuss amongst them. So those are the ones we're going to be doing this time. Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to actually getting back something to push me back into reading more. I'm almost done with one of the books I've got going on. I'm still reading Revolution in 35mm because that's had some very interesting films that, of course, has prompted me to want to watch more things. Looking forward to diving back into Stephen King. And this will actually be the first time that all three of them will be ones I'm reading from a physical book versus listening to an audio. I think for any of our summers that we've done, there's usually been at least one of them. One of them I've done as an audio for when I'm out mowing and stuff. I got acres to mow, folks. And I do actually possess the books, so I just got to grab them off my shelf.
Yeah, I'll be doing the same. I'm reading Picnic at Hanging Rock right now because it's playing in July at the Los Feliz 3 in 35mm. It's on my challenge list for Podcast Macabre this year. And I promised myself before my second viewing of it, I was reading that book first. So I got to get through that before I start my Summer of Steven and have everything ready to go for that screening in July. But I'm looking forward to seeing that on the big screen.
Nice. And my only other horror viewing for the past week is actually for the Criterion Challenge, also on Letterboxd. And it was Eyes Without a Face. Hadn't watched that in a long time.
Nice.
It's quality. Still such a good movie. So just creepy. The creepiness, that face mask and the etherealness as she kind of flips through the house. Ah. But cool. Well, speaking of summer, it's time to go kick things off by getting off of here. Go do projects and shit. I was working on fencing earlier, so our house has been vocal stemming to Diggy Diggy Hole from the Dwarven Metal group. So I was drivey drivey posts, but Rain and Lisa are Diggy Diggy Hole.
I'll pretend I know what you're talking about.
I'll send you the link. Dwarven metal. It's a subgenre of metal, almost like the pirate metal. Yeah, I'll send it to you. In the meantime, I've been Chris.
I'm Joe.
And I'm Jenny.
And we will catch you next time, folks.
Thank you, Fright Fans, for listening to this episode of the Podcast Macabre. Visit our webpage at podcastmacabre.com for more content, including an archive of all of our episodes, and visit our hosting site over at podcastmacabre.libsyn.com. You can stream and download show episodes through nearly all podcast platforms, our Libsyn hosting site, and our webpage. Please subscribe, rate, and review the show wherever you listen to us. Follow the Podcast Macabre on the Facebook page, on Twitter at Podcast Macabre, and on our Instagram at instagram.com/podcastmacabre. Until next time, don't be afraid of the dark. Be afraid of what's in it.